So thank you for joining again, everyone. Day two now of the training. So the agenda again, it's pretty flexible. I want to go over the logic branching scenarios again. I know we started a bit at the end of training session one, but I want to sort of go over it again just to make sure that everyone has a clear understanding of how to do it and how to use it correctly. And as well as the varying audio channels, logic branching, I'm going to also do missing metadata updating or corrections based on incoming frame size or frame height, that sort of thing. And also I've added another one in for video audio speed up and slow down, and we can look at that as well. I will go over a template blueprint that I've seen that involves the use of graph stages, and I'll tell you how to identify when a graph stage is really required to be used over multiple logic branching scenarios. And then I'm going to talk through a couple of the MP4 presets that I've seen, because that seems like a particularly popular workflow with Microsoft and customers. So I'll just flip back to the designer. So this is what we built yesterday before I started adding the logic branching. So it's a multi-bit rate MP4 scenario with the creation of the manifest file as well. The one I found from yesterday probably wasn't coming across very clear was what the speaker position assigning does versus the channel remapping. So I've made a little blueprint that would probably show this a little bit better than I explained it yesterday. Okay, so this is a simple start to a blueprint or a workflow. I'm interleaving two mono audio tracks into one track with two channels. And on the input of the speaker position assigner, if I double click that pin, you'll see there are no speaker position assignments currently, but the number of channels are two. And then in the speaker position assigner, if I click that, channel one speaker I've defined as being left, channel two speaker I've defined as being right, and I can verify that this is happening by double clicking on the output pin. And then you can see I've got channel zero is left, channel one is right, so it is doing the mapping correctly. And if you see just up above here, I've just made a few graphs that show what's happening to the audio throughout this little cycle. So the source audio, channel 1 and channel 2 from the audio stream interleaver, they go into the speaker position assigner without any mapping at all. And it's the speaker position assigner's job to then define those channel mappings and then pass them to the next component. So in this scenario, I've passed them to the channel remapper component. And channel 1 speaker I've defined as right, channel 2 as left. And so this is what we get. So the remapper sees the mapping on the input side and then maps those to the output. If I define channel 1 as mono, for example, it will tell me that it can't see mono on the input. So the only way it can remap the incoming channels to the output is if they've got a valid speaker position assignment that I'm selecting down here. So the reason I bring this up is, again, because if we only had one channel coming in, for example, and it was mono, I could use the remapper to map that twice and create the stereo output. It's like I explained yesterday, there are two ways, really, to do that. You can use a... use an interleaver, and you could pass that same mono track twice to the interleaver, but I prefer to do it this way. It's much cleaner, and the mapping is done inside the components. Okay, so now I'll start building a blueprint. As I explained yesterday, the best way to start is to define the input and the output. Find the input and output, locations and file, then need to add a media file input. Then connect this up to the primary source file pin. And now it exposes all of the data streams that are available to me from the decoding of that file. So the first logic scenario I want is with varying channels of 0, 1, 2, 4, 6, or 8. So I'll first add the audio stream interleaver because all of these audio tracks are separate and each track contains one channel of audio. I can verify this again by double-clicking on the output of one of the pins.
Quick question here.
Yes.
You have 8 channels here.
Yep.
I see they're exposed in 2 different ways, AES and then the raw channels. Is there any particular scenarios you would want to use the AES ones?
If you were going to preserve that encoding, so you can also see with, I've got the compressed video form as well, so it's just unwrapping those essences. So it's telling me that the video essence is an MPEG-2 variation, and the compressed audio essences are AES. So I could, if I wanted to, I could just strip those out straight into another multiplexer without having to re-encode them.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
It's given me the option to do something with the compressed video and audio essences or to do something with the uncompressed decoded version.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, okay. So the best way to start building your audio logic is to kind of get the worst case scenario. So if you know that the total amount of audio tracks that would be coming into your blueprint would be 8 or 16 or something like that, build the blueprint with that file, because if you build it with a 4-channel file, you won't have the ability to connect these pins to interleave it. So if I had, for example, this is an 8-track one. If I went in to build my scenario on that, then added a 16-track source file, these 8 pins here haven't been connected. So if 16 tracks is something that you would probably typically see, then this is how you should start building your blueprint. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so I'll go back to my 8-track. And then as I was touching on yesterday, you may need to scenarios when there is no audio at all, and you may want to inject audio silence. This is when you need to add the audio silence source component, and then the amount of channels. It could be whatever you want here. 2 is the default, so I'll just leave it as 2 at the moment. And you'll see that there is an issue here with the bits per sample mismatch. And what that's telling me is that the bit depth or bits per sample of the uncompressed audio coming from the file are different to the bits per sample coming from the audio silence source. So what we can do there for the time being is to just change the bit depth on the audio silence. But really you should, if you were going to plan for this scenario, you would add bit depth converters to all of the incoming tracks just to make sure that when they go into the interleaver, they all have the same bit depth and that there's no issue. For now, I'll leave that. All right, so we've got 8 channels coming from the source and then 2 from the audio silence. So the total number of channels now going out of the audio stream interleaver is 10. So I know that if I started adding logic, And I said, if the number of channels is equal to 2, then I know that this is silence, or there's no audio in source. And then I'm just going to add logic branches for the various scenarios. So if that's yes, I will make a decision based on that later. Number of channels equals 3, then I know that the source is mono, or one channel. And then I'll just do this for all of the different scenarios, and I'll just do a yes, no on all of them. I'm just going to skip a couple of the scenarios I was going to do, and I'm just going to do one more. Say number of channels equals 8. And then I know that this is 5.1 surround, 6 channels. Okay, so if number of channels equals 2, that's telling me that the source file has no audio, and so we're just going to generate a couple of audio silence channels for the output configuration. So I'll add an MPEG-4 multiplexer up here. I'll add my AVC encoder. And I'm going to encode to AAC as well. And then what I'm also going to do another thing. So if the source file contains 6 channels, so this scenario here, I'm going to say that maybe we'll also encode to Dolby Digital. And we'll preserve that 5.1 configuration. But then what we'll also do is we'll do a downmix. Downmix to stereo. So in this scenario, we'll do both things, and we'll make a 5.1 surround track, and then we'll downmix that configuration to stereo as well. Okay. So I'm going to add to this workflow shortly and make some changes, but for the time being, I'm just going to make the connections. So what we're going to do here, because the audio stream interleaver doesn't preserve the mapping of the channels, we're going to need to start adding this data type updaters. So if it's 2, you can see you can update a lot of the metadata settings within the data stream of the audio. So what we're looking for is the speaker positions. And again, the speaker position assigner does the same job. In fact, when you add a custom configuration here, this audio data type updater component will actually add the speaker position assigner component inside it. So what I'm going to do now is add a branch merger, which, as I said yesterday, whenever you're doing logic branches, you should merge the output of each of them just to keep the workflow tidy and make sure that there are no data flows straying down some other paths that would throw errors a bit later on. So I'm going to add this audio data type updater again. And this is the scenario for if the incoming source file has mono. And I'll go down here and I will assign the channel as 1.0 center. And I need to assign that channel so when I give it to the channel remapper, I can pick that speaker position assignment twice. And then on the output, there will be two channels, which will be the same thing. And the good thing about this is that even if there's no data flowing down these pins, it will still give you the scenario as if there were. So if there were three channels, yes, then it will tell you what the decisions would be, so you don't have to load different source files with each of these different scenarios. So that's quite a useful thing. But what we will need to do, using the channel remapper, because we've changed the speaker position assignments to center, we'll just need to change them back using a speaker position assigner or another audio data type updater. So if I just use that again. And then I'm going to merge this with that branch merger for stereo audio. I'll just put this here. And so if the incoming has two channels, so we won't need to do anything with that except we'll need to add the speaker position assignments. We'll just put that there. And then we'll throw that to the branch merger as well. And you see, this is starting to get a bit more complex and bigger. So in a minute, we're going to need to think about grouping these into a graph and sort of shrinking them down to a more manageable size. So I'm just going to try and tidy this up a little bit. I'll put my encoders out the way. Okay, so now I've got the scenario. If it's 5.1, yes, I want to do the down mix. And then I want to also preserve the 5.1. So I'm going to, first of all, because this is still a valid situation. So here I'm making two channels. In this scenario here, we're creating two channels. Likewise, stereo, we're just sort of passing the existing two channels through. And then with the 5.1 surround scenario, I'm down mixing to 2.0, but I also want to pass through that channel as well. So I'll just group these up, kind of explain what I'm doing. Okay, so they're grouped now in a graph, and I'll just call this audio logic. And there's also going to be a scenario where you might need to use a logic gate as another sort of way to protect downstream components from becoming active. And I'll just add one of those in a second. So the number of channels, if it equals to 8, then I know that the true incoming configuration is 6. So I'll expose that in the parent graph, and I'll use the outcome of this in a minute. Okay, so you see here I've got is 5.1 surround, but that's the scenario as if the number of channels equals to 8. You can see that if it's 8, it can't really do a down mix, so we're going to have to do another speaker position assignment and a remap to get that configuration set correctly first. So this time I'll just add a speaker position assigner as opposed to the data type updater, but you could use either for this. And what I'm just going to do now is give a 5.1 configuration and you see channel 7 speaker is set to none, channel 8 speaker is set to none. So if I double click on the output of that, I see those six channels being mapped correctly. And then the next two have no speaker position assignments, which is what I want to see, because when I add my channel remapper and just drop that in over that existing pin, I'm going to choose that same configuration that I've just put. You can see if I scroll down, it says 8. And then if I double click on the output of the remapper, I've gone down to 6. So I've dropped those two channels, which would be the two silence channels. So now we've got lots of 5.1 scenarios, or sorry, 2.0 scenarios being made, and then we'll just expose that pin on the output. In fact, I'm going to show you another trick which will help. You see, I've exposed the pin that says out. That doesn't really help us for when we shrink the graph. We don't actually know what that means. So I'm just going to show you a trick. If I delete that by just clicking on the pin and selecting delete, that will delete that output pin from the graph. I'm going to expose this pin in the parent graph, and then I'm going to delete the connection. Now, as you can see, the output pin actually stays where it is on the output of the graph, but I can connect other pins to this now. So now when I shrink that graph down, I can see that my uncompressed audio too, and I'll know that that means there's two channels coming out of that. Is that clear for everyone?
Yeah. It's because you cannot rename the pin, right? You have to do that because you cannot rename.
That's correct. There is a way you can rename pins in graphs, and that's exactly how I made these pins here. What you would need to do is save the workflow and then open it up in Notepad, and then manually edit some of the settings. But so, like I say, this is a kind of a good way to get around that, the not being able to rename pins. You can just expose a pin that looks similar to what you need, and then you can delete the connection that you've made. So now let me just do my Dolby Digital again. I don't think I can do it. Okay, so I know that the output of yes is going to be 8 channels, and I know that the output of 2.0 is going to be 2, but I want to take this one where I've stripped out those two channels of audio silence to create the 6. So I can pass this to the Dolby Digital encoder, and it's also got the mapping I need. So I'm just going to expose that one. So now that's 2.0, and that'll be 5.1. I mean, obviously, it'd be ideal if it said 5.1, but we'll just have to take that as it is. So 2.0 for my AAC encoder. You click on your AAC encoder and make sure you've chosen the correct channel layout. Now the component's actually quite good at telling you that what the incoming channel configuration is, and it will tell you if what you're setting is not compatible with the input, which is quite a good way of kind of missing getting an error. So again, just set the settings how you'd like. I'm not going to change these too much. Now I've got my stereo, and I'm going to get my 5.1 as well. And I've got my ABC video encoded. So now I just need to add a few more MPEG-4 multiplexers. We could just do that. You see that these are grey, so that means it's not happy with something. So if I go down here, if number of channels equals 8, yes. That's because I've got 10 at the moment. So I'm just going to take two of these away, and you'll see the illuminated path will change, and now the configuration that I've set up for will be valid. So likewise, you can kind of test this a bit further. You can take these away, and you can see the path is changing again down the scenarios that you've made. If I just make these reconnections, I'm going to add my file outputs as well. Copy and paste that a few times, then do my control left and control down to align them. Then I'm going to go back to doing an expression, clicking the configuration button, dollar sign, and then root output write directory, backslash, dollar sign again, and then I'm going to preserve the source file base name like last time, and maybe I'll just call this video for now, .mp4. I'm going to copy that, go to my second output, expression again, and then I'm just going to do stereo, and now I'm going to paste again, and then do the same thing again but surround. Okay, so I haven't actually needed to use this in a logic gate, but for example, I'll show you what the logic gate would do. So I know we set the scenario up that if it was 5.1 we would do a stereo track and a 5.1 track, but for example, I could put a logic gate in here. And then when I put the output of a scenario in, it will illuminate that as a data flow that would work. So does everyone kind of understand the purpose of the logic gate? It will not let the data flow through it unless a decision is passed to the gate input as a yes. So if I expose no, which has no data flowing through it, and then added that to the gate input, it would block the data from flowing any further. But as this yes decision is true, it will allow the data to flow through. One of the scenarios where I would use this, if I just reconnect my audio, rather than that being yes, I'll delete that. I'll delete the no as well on the output. So I'll say if the number of channels equals 2, yes. Okay, so we've decided that if they're 2, then that's going to be the audio silent. So I'm just going to expose that pin in the output. So I know that this is the scenario for audio silence. And I'm going to manipulate the file names if it's audio silence. So I'll do file name source. And this kind of works the same way as the file output component. You see it's got the file field. So I'm just going to do what I did before, and I'm going to paste the expression in that I made. I'm going to say, I'll call this silence MP4, for example. And at the moment, if it is 2.0, it goes to the 2.0 file output, so I'm just going to connect this one up here, and I'm going to change the setting on the file output component to untick manual input, which means it's expecting the data to come in on the file name. And then I'm going to add a logic gate at the end of this. I'm going to say that only give that file if audio is true. So you see that it's not giving it because it knows that it's getting valid audio coming through. So I'm also going to, I'll just rename this first, file name for audio silence. Now add another component. I'll do file name normal. And I'm going to do the same again. I'm going to paste my expression in. And I'm just going to call this stereo as we did previously. And I also want to throw this to that as well. But do you remember what I said about this would be a logic scenario? So if I put my logic gate on that, I've now got two pins feeding my file name, which is not something you want to get in the habit of doing, which is where the branch merger comes into it again. So I'll just add the branch merger, and I'll connect those two pins to that, which means that the file output component will only be receiving one data flow, regardless of whether it's active or not. It's just the clean way to do things. But we also need to give the logic gate here for the normal file name a valid sort of input or logical scenario. So at the moment we've said if number of channels equals 2, we know that means that the audio is silent or there's no incoming audio, sorry. And if the answer is no, then we mean we know that it's got some audio from the source file. So if we expose that by right-clicking, that will go on to the output, that graph. And then we want to give that to our gate input. And you see now that's illuminated this path, so it's feeding the file name to the file output component. Okay, is that clear up the how to use a logic gate or when to use the logic gate? There are many different scenarios. That's just one that I've seen being used in the real world, and it's kind of an easy thing to show as well.
Would you rather do it this way or through scripting, which I assume is also possible?
I would rather do this way. But like I say, scripting is possible. But the way I see it is, if you can just connect 4 or 5 pins together and avoid using a script, then that'd be a pretty perfect workflow, I think. But it's probably a user preference. And we will go through scripting tomorrow morning with Peter Kavanagh, and he will kind of outline sort of the different types of scripts that you can use to manipulate blueprints and graphs. Like I say, either is possible.
So the recommendation would be to try to do it with the components and use script for when it's not possible with the...
Yes, I would always look for a way to do it with the components. I mean, that's why they're there in a way, is to be able to deal with these flexible scenarios. And what these components are, these group of components, they're doing, in effect, what a script is going to do the same thing. It's just doing it in a graphical way. So I would say if you could find a way to use components to do things, then use the component. But it's a user preference, I guess. Okay, so that covers some varying source file scenarios for the audio channel, sorry. And if I just sort of drag this out of the way, we'll just look at what we've done. So we've added the audio silence source. So we know that in a worst-case scenario, we're getting two channels in here. And we know that in that scenario, it'll be silent. And then we're just updating these scenarios. We know that we want to create a stereo output. And in the scenario where we've got 5.1 on the input, genuine 5.1, we can then use that to create a 5.1 file and a downmix to stereo as well. So we're doing quite a lot of things here with just a few of these components. So if I move the audio out of the way, I'll just try and do some things with the video, just in case. Okay, so when I was showing you some files yesterday, we came across the scenario where some of the metadata was missing from the file, and that is what happens in real life scenarios as well. Some of the file types don't carry some metadata. So I will just first of all add a video data type updater. And if I just stick it on the active pin there, there are some things that we can specify if they're missing. So I'll leave frame rate, for example, but frame layout we can assume is progressive. Field dominance is irrelevant in that scenario. And we'll just sort of say, you know, if it's... So we're making some assumptions, and we'll just assume that the aspect ratio is 16:9:2. And just remember from yesterday I said if this is ticked, then it's going to override what's already been set. But if it's unticked, it will only take these settings if they're missing. Okay, so it's quite handy to have. But sometimes when you're setting or guessing or assuming what the metric would be, you could be getting it wrong. So you need to make some decisions based on maybe what the incoming frame size is and frame height. Frame height and frame rate. So we can add some logic branches to kind of make the most informed decision possible. So logic branch, we'll add one of those in and we'll connect the video. We'll double click and we'll say if the frame rate is 2 by 1001 and any. Okay, so we can change the scenario and we can add multiple scenarios. So I just want to say if the frame rate is 24:1001 or just 24. So if it's any of those frame rates, or another way to do this, if the frame rate is less than 25, then we'll delete that scenario. So if it's less than 25, we're going to make an assumption. So that assumption will be that it's progressive. But if it's, for example, no, so we're going to then do another frame rate. So we're going to say if the frame rate is 25 frames per second, we will then want to say we'll do this video data type updater. But here we'll say if it is 25, we can assume that it's interlaced top field first. But then the color space standard as well, we'll say if it's 25 frames per second and HD. So we'll just scroll down to image height, and we'll say if the image height is higher than 720, then we're going to assume it's interlaced top field first and the color space is 709. Otherwise we can make a different assumption, but so we're going to assume those things. So otherwise we'll just do 601. So after we've done this, we can use our branch merger again. We'll existing, connect these other two to it. And we're going to do the same thing we did before. We're going to do the group in graph. We're going to shrink that down, and we'll just call this video logic and metadata updating, something like that. And that's what we do for that one. Does anyone have any questions on this and on why we've sort of gone with this scenario?
There's no way to detect the color space standard?
Yes, so there is, but some of the files or source files won't contain the information that we need. So if we double click on the input, for example, so we've got sample layout, color space standard, so it's missing there as the metadata is missing, but some files will contain it. So what we're doing is we're only populating that field if it is missing.
Yeah, got that.
Okay, so we're not overriding or fixing a file. We need to fill out those properties sometimes for our downstream components that if you're doing a color space conversion or something, they would need to know what the existing color space was so they could apply the right conversion.
Okay,
so so that's the video. We've done some logic there. We haven't done anything else regarding the conversion of the video. We see it 16 by 9, top field first, interlaced. It's HD. And we need to deinterlace this for our video, which is going to be used for devices which are progressive display in nature. So the next component to add would be the video format converter. And we'll just drag that in over the active connection as well. And then you can select a preset. So if I just select, in fact, I'll select a downscale to, say, 720p 50. Okay, so what's good about this, about the color space standard being updated prior to this component, is this will define a color space standard here. So if my incoming color space wasn't defined, this component wouldn't like it because we're setting a color space here. So we would actually be adding a color space converter in that component. So it's good to specify that before, because otherwise it will throw an error saying that there are issues with the color space. So when I set the video format preset to 720p, this natively adds the deinterlacer component to change the frame layout to progressive. And you notice that as I perform these changes on the components, I'm always double-clicking on the input and output pins just to make sure that the settings I've set are going through and I haven't missed anything. Is that all clear?
Yeah, quick question though. I understood you could do the exact same settings on the AVC video encoder itself and it would then automatically embed a video format converter inside of it?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's equivalent to what we're doing now?
Yes, it's the same thing. So you could add that there. The reason I've done this is because more often than not, you will probably see multiple AVC video encoders. And if I was to remove this, and I will have set my frame size, frame rate. So if I set this to 25p in all of these, let's do it again. Frame rate. Okay. So what's happening here is the source file, as we've seen, is interlaced. If you feed that interlaced data to each of these components, then these components are going to all deinterlace it. This will deinterlace the video, that will deinterlace the video, that will deinterlace the video. Whereas if you add a video format converter in first, you're only deinterlacing the source once. Does that make sense?
Yes, thanks for explaining. Very useful.
Yeah, so that's the reason. I mean, in the scenario that I was making, you're quite right. When you can just do it in the AVC encoder, why am I doing it in the video format converter? It's just because I know that if I set this and I'll just change this to, if I set this to 576p, then I know that I've now deinterlaced that file to a progressive scan. I know the frame rate and frame size are just what I want. And then I can feed this further to my downstream components that could be all SD, AVC video encodes. And I've already deinterlaced the video, and it's only happened once. So if you have 7 or 8 layers, it would be a very wise decision to deinterlace the video first using that video format converter. Another reason to have it prior is the incoming preset might match this already, in which case you wouldn't need to do any scaling or deinterlacing at all. So the last step now, I'm going to add my write completes to the output file asset pin. And then on the audio silence source, as I was explaining yesterday, you need to send it a stop command, otherwise it will continue to run the blueprint. Unless it's told to stop. So if I can remember the notification. So if I send the video in here, and then when the video is done, the video stream is done, it will send a stop command, or it will send a trigger, which the input pin here identifies, and then it stops running the component. So I'm just going to sort of save this now, which I should have been doing throughout. I'll save this A2 workflow. And also, something I haven't done as yet to test the blueprint at any point. What I recommend when building the blueprint is do a little section, you know, hit the start button. You know, if you need to run it without the file output components as well, and it will happily encode, it just won't write to disk anywhere. So I recommend doing that throughout when you're testing or building a blueprint. So I'm just going to hit run and see what we get. Okay, so that was only a short file, so it seemed to work fine, so I'll just get this up. So that passed okay without any errors, which is pretty lucky. So let me just go back to what I was going to go through after this. Yeah. Okay. Anyone have any more questions on this workflow or needs me to run through any more logic branching gap or branch merger scenarios?
Yes. Question about the silent source. You added an end of stream notification. I saw in another blueprint that I think Peter directly connected the uncompressed video to the timing pin.
Yes.
You can do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's just to, I think, give it the frame rate. So you could do that. Press start. Did Peter also connect something similar to the stop on
no.
the audio silence?
No,
it
just used the timing input
okay.
pin. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe either scenario works. So if I just remove that. Yeah. So it's does a similar thing. So this is just expecting a stop trigger being sent from a different location, and that's how I've used it previously.
That's good.
So we'll leave it as that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So now what I want to do is I want to create a graph stage. So I've created this blueprint. It's not entirely complex, but click on it, then group in, and then graph stage. Okay, and you see it's just grouped in one big graph now. So if I minimize this, it gets really small. And I can do run if source is 25 FPS, so something like that. And then I'll maybe have another graph. There we go. Just copied and pasted that. And you need to always connect through the graph. So you don't need to expose the pins on the inputs to connect through. You can connect the primary pin directly into the media file input through the graph. It doesn't need to be exposed like this, for example. I don't even think you can. Yeah. Okay, so if we minimize this, actually, what I'll do is, in this scenario, I'll say run if the source is 24 frames per second. So this is not a typical scenario that you would use a graph stage, but I just wanted to show kind of the purpose of it. If you're using too much logic within your blueprint, then it's probably best to just make two kind of independent blueprints in a form of a graph stage, and then do a logical scenario at the start, just one basic logical scenario, to run the correct blueprint. So I do have a blueprint that I'll show you in a minute, kind of uses a real-life scenario. I just wanted to show you how it starts. Sorry, I'm miles away. Wrong file name. There you go. So media inspector. So rather than using a media file input, we connect the media inspector component to the source file pin, and then the data types to a logic branch. So if we double click, it's not giving us any data at the moment. But what we know is, it's not giving any. All right. So the way it reveals the data types are slightly different. So I'm just going to try and get one to show us the properties. Now I think I need to run on the graph. But the data properties aren't the same as you've seen in the normal logic branch. For example, num channels, that's not what it looks like. Or for example, we're going to be doing frame rate. The way it looks is something like this. Track.0, track details. So this is what that data property looks like. So we're saying if that frame rate equals to 25, then it can run that graph. And if not, it can run that graph. Just hit the start button just to see what happens. Nothing. It's always when you try to demo something. Oh, there we go. So manual input was selected. So that's the problem there. So I'll add a fresh component. And I'll also use the opportunity to say, although we're connecting the primary source file to the file name, when it's manual input, you can actually use an expression to say, if I hit Shift 4, I can go to root primary source file. I missed it. Root primary source file. Hit OK. And then it will appear with that source file. So remember expressions, they derive the value from the root of the blueprint. Primary source file at the root of the blueprint is that. So it's exactly the same thing. So if you double click on data type now when you've done it correctly, like I should have, you get all of the details from all of the tracks. So you can see here track 0 looks like the video. You've got information on GOP structures, image height, image width. So I know track 0 is the video. If you go further, track 1, you see it's got channel details, it's got audio channel bit depth. So this is where the audio tracks are stored. So track 1 to 10, I think. So track 0. We'll have a look for frame rate. Yeah, so this is what the logic branch needs to have in its property. So let's just check, see what mine says. Track.0, so track details dot frame underscore rate. Okay, so that looks pretty good. But what we need to remember is, again with source files, sometimes the video won't be the first track identified in a file. The first track could be audio. So what we want to do is select any, and we want to add the same condition lots of times just in case, and then we'll say if track 1 or track 2 or track 3 and so on. We'll just continue to go.
But what's happening if the track number 10 doesn't exist?
It won't throw an error. It's just a scenario. It would just ignore it.
Okay.
So if track 11 doesn't exist, then we can add a condition now, and we'll say if track 15. Track 15 equals 25. It shouldn't matter. So you see that it's given us all of these different scenarios now, and now we can add the input there. And hopefully, if I press start, it will decide to run one of these graphs. Okay, so that's what it looks like. Now, this one will stay kind of in an idle state. It will not be running, and yet this one will, and you'll see the progress bar as well go along the top. So that's how a graph stage is run. You would use a media inspector file component, which, by the way, I'll just bring up now. If your component visibility level is set to normal, I don't actually think you see it. So if a customer needs to use it, but they say they can't see it, useful thing to note is that under File Preferences, Component Visibility needs to be set to Advanced, and then you'll see it. Okay? Well, I just want to go on to showing you some of the preset blueprints that I've been given. Okay, so that's some logic branching and some graph stages. I'll just go on to opening some blueprints that I've seen that are already published. Okay, so this is the same sort of thing as I've just done. It's got the media inspector component, and you can see that an error has come up because when this blueprint was last saved, the primary source file was not on my system, it was on someone else's system who made it. And this component always runs an error when the blueprint initializes, so you'll always see an error when you load a blueprint that has a graph stack with the media inspector. So your customers may see this, but you can just clear the error just by clicking on the red E and then hitting clear all. And then I would say to straight away change the primary source file to something you've got on premises that won't throw the error. And the scenario here is it's checking through all of the tracks to say, is the image width less than 640? And if it is, it's passing through frame size by the look of this. So if we open it up, so this is a blueprint used in North America. It's got the audio stream interleaver, as I've already shown you. It's got some audio logic if we open this up. And it's got very similar audio logic shown you. So again, what the output of this is going to be, this is feeding the branch merger 2.0, so all these scenarios are feeding it stereo. And then it's encoding it to 2.0 AAC Dolby. Now what we're going to do here is check the video as well, see what processing has been done here prior to the encoder. And this is kind of similar to what I also just shown you on the last blueprint. This is making assumptions based on the frame size. So it's saying if the frame height is greater than 720, it's also making an assumption on the color space standard. But again, this is only happening if the metadata is missing. And what it's also assuming is that the display aspect ratio is 16:9. Now, if the image height is less than 720, it's assuming that the file is SD, and therefore it's doing an SD color space and a display aspect ratio of 4:3. Now, bear in mind that the video data type updaters aren't actually doing anything, so if you select 4:3, all you're doing is adding that metadata to the file. You're not converting the actual aspect ratio or doing anything with the frame size. You're just filling in a blank, really. And again, this is another logic to specify what's happening if the frame size is 24 or 23.98, and it's making some assumptions here as well based on the frame height and frame size. So it's saying if it's 23.98 or 24 frames per second, that it's passing through here, and that we're going to assume that the frame layout is progressive. And likewise, it's doing the same thing if the frame rate is 60 FPS or 59.94. And then if it's NTSC, it's going to assume it's interlaced bottom field first. So these are all assumptions, but they are kind of good assumptions based on the frame size and frame rate. Okay, does anyone have any questions on this at the moment? I know this is a more of a North American-centric blueprint, but it's still quite useful to see.
So we will need to update it for 25 and 50 Hz videos,
yes,
video source files?
Yes, but I would prefer if you made one from scratch and just come to me with help. But this is just to show you kind of the way it should be done. You update the metadata, then you do your processing, like your scaling, deinterlacing, then you do your encoding and multiplexing. And it follows that logic throughout. And the big thing is knowing how to manage the audio, which I think I've shown you quite well how you should manage it. As long as you can get to grips with using the logic branches, the branch mergers, the audio data type updaters or speaker position assigners, and the channel remappers. They're very useful components, especially the channel remapper and speaker position assigner. Very useful to manipulate metadata and then take the channels where you need them to go. So if I look at the other graph here, so the purpose of this graph looks to me like if the ABC, or sorry, if the source is less than 640 wide, frame size width, then it's going to pass through the frame size, do no scaling. Whereas this one, it looks like a very similar workflow, except it is going to do some scaling. Scaler set in the ABC encoder. But it's making an assumption, so not an assumption, but it's basing on the display aspect ratio of the incoming video. It will either encode to 640 by 360, which is a 16 by 9 frame size, or if it's set to 4 by 3, this no decision, and it will be 640 by 480, which is a 4 by 3 display aspect ratio frame size. So although there's not a lot of kind of assumptions being made there, well, there's a lot of assumptions, but not a lot of logic that are kind of forcing us to do graph stages, it's still a good way to sort of see how it's being used. Now, if I load another one. So this actually looks very similar, just without the graph stage. So I'll just load another one instead of that. So I'll load one of your presets. Okay, this one's a little bit better. Okay, so again, this is using graph stages. So and it's the same concept. You've got the media inspector. It's set to primary source file. And remember, when the media inspector component initializes, you're always going to get an error unless it can see this file straight away. So we're just going to clear that because I don't like seeing red. And then we're going to have a quick look at the logic that's being done here. So it's the same scenario that I've given you. It's just a lot of if else is going on. So we're saying if the frame height or frame width is greater than 1920, then we're saying that's a 4K file. If it's not, then we're going down here and we're saying is it equal to or less than. If it's yes, then we're saying that if the image height is greater than 1280, then we're assuming that it's 1080. Otherwise, it follows down here, and then we go to 720p, and then we go to 576 or SD. So that's the scenarios that are going to drive one of these blueprint or one of these graph stages to run. So I'm just going to throw a few of these out the way, and we'll look at the 4K one. But you'll notice here that the titles of each graph stage kind of indicate what's being done. So it's saying here that if the file is 4K, we're going to do 10 layers of encoding. If it's 1080p, we're going to do 8 layers, 6 layers, and 5 layers. And this is one of the key reasons to do or to use graph stages if your incoming frame size is going to define the amount of layers that you're going to be encoding to, then you should be doing a graph stage for each of those scenarios. So same as before, we've got our audio interleaving and then our audio logic. And you can see here, they're also going to preserve what looks to me like 2.0. You can find it. Yep, so that's two channels, and then it's compressed Dolby Digital, so that's going to probably be 5.1. There we go, six channels. So now if we just take a look at this logic, it'll be similar to what we've already seen. Oh, let's see, it's very straightforward. So what we're expecting, or what the customer or whoever built this blueprint is expecting for a 4K file, will have six channels of audio. So it's all it's doing here, if we go down here, it's assuming a little Indian on the audio. It's going to do speaker positions in a 5.1 configuration in the WAV format. And it does that, so then it can do a proper downmix to stereo, but it's also going to preserve that 5.1 into the Dolby Digital. Now what it's also going to do, if the source file does not have six channels like expected, it's going to throw an error to say, I don't have the amount of channels that I should have. So that's the scenario that it looks like the customer wants to happen. If it's missing audio, then throw an error and don't encode. So that's what they've decided. So if I shrink this down, and I'll do just have a quick look at the video, but I think it's going to be similar to what we've seen. Again, yeah, so we've got various scenarios here saying, you know, if the color space is missing or aspect ratio needs updating, then look at the frame size, again, frame layout, and then down here we're deinterlacing only if necessary. And this is where the logic branch is doing an actual video process rather than just metadata updating. So if the frame layout is not progressive, then you see here it's going to deinterlace that file and then feed it back to the branch merger, and then it will continue down all the way to the AVC encoders. And we'll just take a quick look at this setup. So this is much of what we've already seen, and we've actually made something very similar already ourselves. So although this blueprint is looking complex, this is something that over the past 2 days we've been able to build ourselves. And again, just to make things neater, when you've done lots of components similar, so for example, lots of AVC encoders, MPEG-4 multiplexers, and then maybe even file outputs, just group them all to make them smaller. So then you can not worry about how you're navigating around your workflow. So then this is the old Smile playlist writer, but I never actually used it, but it didn't work as expected. Is that right?
Yes, I think we have been able to use it, yeah, to generate the playlist for MPEG-4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what's happening with the 4K. And then it's just going to be very similar for the rest of these layers. But if I just take a look at the SD next, it'll have the same or very similar metadata updating and deinterlacing logic, very similar audio logic. In fact, it looks very it looks identical actually, because it's still giving us the option for the 2.0 or the 5.1. And I expect that the real reason for the need for graph stages here is these different layers are going to have different frame sizes and different frame rates per blueprint or per graph stage. So that's a good scenario for when the need to use graph stages is a good one. Okay, is everyone clear on that?
Yes, I think so.
Yep. So no questions on graph stages or when to use them? I wouldn't use a graph stage for anything else other than to trigger the running of almost a full blueprint. So you can see here, in it from start to finish would be how you could run an entire workflow, and then it's just groups. So you kind of got four blueprints really in one blueprint. That's kind of the way to look at it. You're executing a whole workflow, then after it's done, the graph would stop, and then the output assets will be delivered. Okay, I'll just see if I've got one more. It was the AMS manifest writer. Which is the new component to create the outputs that you want. The output is, see at the moment this is saved as a dot workflow, but because of all this gray space around, this is, which means this is actually just a graph. So we can, what I will do is, I can't actually, I just have to copy that into a new workspace. And once you've grouped a bunch of components, you can also right-click on the head of the graph and select ungroup, and then they would all just ungroup from the graph. Really, the graph would disappear, and then you could do what you want. So the output file aggregator, I'm not sure if that's a... Yeah, so I've not actually seen this, I guess. The more output files you add, it just aggregates them to the output assets, and then the AMS manifest writer just will, it obviously looks like it's running a script underneath, but I've got this to work without the need for writing a script. So just talk about, you know, what we've seen here. It's a very similar setup. Very similar workflow to what we've already seen. So it's just doing some various metadata updating like we've already done. So this is actually kind of a more simplistic blueprint. Does anyone have any questions on this one? So I don't, there's not really much to explain about what's going on here. It's very similar to what we've just been doing.
What is the AAC controller doing?
AAC controller. Yes, if I click on the, sorry, if I click on the question mark, it's saying it's fragmenting the input stream into individual AAC samples and extracts the AAC metadata. Now, I've not actually needed to use this before because it looks to me like this is in the core component. So what I mean by that is if I add a Dolby AAC encoder and I throw this there and then that somewhere else, this actually adds the AAC controller inside it. So basically what this is doing, this is an AAC encoder core component, which means it's not adding this controller in it. So is that, does that make sense? This is basically just one of the components that you would see inside an AAC encoder compound component.
Yeah, thanks. I just didn't see it before, so yeah.
Yeah, I know it's, yeah. So one way to kind of see this is, or to identify, you see the encoder here, it doesn't have a green S. So you can guess from that that it's a core component. All of the core components, they don't have green S's. So if I add just a normal AAC encoder, I'll have my green S, and it's got these components inside that make up that AAC encoder. So that's one way to identify if a customer's running a core component or not. And it's kind of one of the reasons why I would be wary when you go to file preferences, when you set the visibility to normal, You see, the core component goes away because you shouldn't use that in normal practice. So if a customer is using a core component, it's probably best to find out exactly why, because it doesn't normally benefit you to do that, because you have to add three or four components around it to be able to get the workflow running. So that's my advice with core components. Do not use them if you see another component with the same name that doesn't have core next to it. Okay, well, I hope it was informative again. We didn't cover as much sort of new information, but I hope that the logic was beneficial to you and how we do that. And I guess I'll see you all tomorrow morning. Thank you very much for your time.